Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Love and Relationships Podcast, a hotline style show where people call in with questions about love, sex, dating, singleness, and marriage, and mental and emotional health. I'm Deborah Falada, and I'm so glad you're tuning into these candid, unscripted conversations where I answer your questions in short, bite-sized, practical answers. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a licensed professional counselor, relationship expert, and author of 6 books. I also run the popular relationship advice blog, truelovedates.com, reaching millions of people with the message that healthy people make healthy relationships. If you have a question that you want me to answer on the show, send it by voice memo to Deborah@truelovedates.com or submit it on my podcast page, truelovedates.com/love-and-relationships, and I'll do my best to get it answered on one of the episodes. So let's get started. It is February, which means our couples therapy sessions are rolling back out. I'm so excited about these on-air conversations with real-life couples. We're pulling back the curtain on marriage and showing you the raw, real, authentic side that's going on behind the scenes in everyday life. These courageous couples are joining me on the podcast to talk about their relationship, their struggles, and ways they want to strengthen their marriage. So join us this month of February for Couples On Air Therapy. Here we go. So this morning on the podcast, I'm really excited to introduce you to a couple all the way from New York, Mary and Ben. You guys, it's so good to have you with me this morning.
Thanks for having us.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves? How long have you been married? How did you meet? You know, give us a little bit of your story. Help us get to know you a little bit. No, like okay, who's going first, Ben or Mary?
We're not together, so it's hard because we can't like nudge each other.
Yeah. Maybe start by telling us you guys are in different locations right now.
Yes.
So yeah, Mary, explain that a little bit.
So I'm in New York right now at home, and Ben is in Dallas for work. That's kind of part of our lifestyle right now, as he's on the road quite a bit. And so there's, in the last year or so, more times he's been on the road, I think, than able to be home sometimes. And so, yeah, that's why we're not together today, but you know, we make it work as best we can. And maybe you can help us a little bit.
Be interested to dig into that dynamic a little bit too. So you're from New York. You've been married for how many years?
26 years.
Wow.
We have 5 children.
Wow.
They're all grown, or we have our last one who's a senior in high school right now. He's 17. And so we're just at the end, so to speak, of this, you know, this type of parenting journey. I know it's continual, but this constant care part is shifting for us. And I think that's the part that we're it's a little unknown, and there's a lot of trepidation in some of that. So,
yeah, you guys have made it to the other end of the parenting journey in a way. Ben, I mean, you guys look so young. I mean, the parenting journey must have not taken a huge toll on you.
Well, we're starting to show some grace somewhere. So I think it has some sort of toll on it. But when we were really young, I think I was 17 and she was 19. And crazily enough, we got married when we were 18 and 20. So, and then we stepped right into kids right after that. You know, I realized that it wasn't the water we were sharing that was causing it. And
you figured out what's causing these children.
Yeah. And then once we started, we just kind of kept going just to try to, like, the goal was to kind of have them a little bit younger. But in reality, you, when you're married that young, you realize only in retrospect how much you didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, I think the one thing that we did know is that we were committed to making the marriage work, which I think is what we've come to realize is a big part about relationships. It's just commitment. You make that and you move to it. Yeah. So I think it was just realizing that, and then just kind of realizing how much grace it took for us to kind of work through growing up, you know, together. So you're getting married young, you're growing up together, and you're raising kids. So thankfully, by God's grace, you know, that all worked well. And then to add a couple other levels of complexity on top of that, I'm an entrepreneur, always been. So we've run businesses from the start. And so our family hasn't necessarily been traditional in that sense.
Yeah.
I think it's becoming more traditional now, I guess. And I've been on the road now for, I think, 20 out of 25 years.
Wow.
Of our marriage. You know, it's been a pretty consistent, you know, drumbeat. We chose to stay in upstate New York because of family, because of the number of kids that we had.
Right.
But work was always in a different city. You know, wow. That's where all the customers that we were servicing were. So,
yeah. So you've had a different dynamic to your relationship. And before we dive into some of the details of your relationship and ways that we can learn and grow together, how did you and I connect? Do you guys remember how we all connected?
Yes. Always let you have space to jump in, Mary. But we first met you on the Loveology work that you did. And then that Mary had a chance to sort of listen and then read your book and then kind of carry down that path. So it's been and then from there to the podcast. So
how fun. Yeah. Well, good. So you know what you're getting into. We can just put it that way, right?
That's right.
Well, that's exciting. You know, 26 years of marriage, 5 kids, traveling as a regular part of that. What would you say has been the pattern of conflict, the cycle that's come up in your relationship that you've had to deal with? If you had to kind of pinpoint one area that's come up the most often, not necessarily a specific topic. I mean, maybe it is the same topic, but sometimes we find patterns in how we do relationships and our needs, the things we get upset about. What would you say your pattern of conflict has been, if you had to pinpoint it? I think for us, it's I think it's just a lifestyle, to be honest with you. It's the I'm home with the kids and I have a different way of doing life, and Ben is working a lot, and he's really good at what he does and he loves what he does. And it's just kind of sometimes we're not always running, not in the same direction, but always have the same focus, even on just a daily basis. And so I think we're always kind of like trying to find those things that we can do together and we can share together outside of just the kids. And so I think that sometimes can just create some tension.
Yeah, that makes sense. Can
I say it with that?
So trying to find where your lives overlap outside of the children, like as individuals. Ben, would you agree with that, or is something different come to your attention?
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of like the rhythm of life has always been a difficult, you know, thing for us to navigate on it. You know, in terms of conflict on it, like I have a deep appreciation for the ask I have on Mary and the family in order for me to be able to do what I do. What that will do sometimes is it will just mean that I'll be more like in our conflict. I'm just trying to always be, you know, mindful of the words I say. I want to be mindful of the feeling Mary has in those moments. You know, when she expresses her frustration or lack of connection. And so one of the challenges for us, you know, between our relationship is I don't tend to share I'm not always honest with how I feel about what's going on in the situation, because I know how much I'm asking from her.
You almost and feel so, like you're indebted to her.
Yeah. I feel like that's That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
Not that she makes me feel it. I don't think it's her on it. It's just the way that I just view life. You know, sometimes I kind of keep a ledger in my head. And so I'm always trying to keep my side clear. And I'm always trying to be mindful of the dynamics of the relationship. And so it can lead to that indebted feeling.
Yeah. So when you feel like you've asked too much of her, like, man, there's so much on her plate and I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing if she wasn't willing to take on all that she does at home with the five kids. So I better not. I don't have space, room. I don't have the deposits made to make any more withdrawals here. Like, whatever she needs, I'm going to focus on it and give her what she needs and listen. Do you feel like the thing that does come up the most often, Mary, is you feeling that disconnect?
Yeah, I think like what he was sharing is that his lack of sharing with me where he's at, I can then make my own assumptions of where he's at, right? And so Ben's a pretty calm, cool, collected guy. Like he doesn't raise his voice. We don't have screaming matches. Like that's just not who he is. Now I might be the one that might raise my voice, but he's just never like that. And sometimes I think what's hard for us is that he gets in his own head and he doesn't share with me what's going on. So then I might jump to a conclusion of what's going on. So I think some of my frustration over the years is I'm thinking, well, he just loves being on the road. He loves his work. He's, you know, going out to eat all the time. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm, you know, this is when the kids were much younger. I don't really feel like that now, but the kids are younger. I'm like, I'm here changing diapers and all this stuff. And he's
living it up.
Yeah. But cause he's not sharing with me the other side of his life.
Yeah. And he's not sharing because he doesn't want to take up any more space than he's already taking. But the irony is that in not taking up any more space, then you start feeling a disconnect. And that space feels like it's too much for you. So how have you navigated that part of it? What have you learned in the 26 years? How did you guys kind of get over that hurdle?
Well, I think we do talk quite a bit. Like, so we have, I think, even we've learned through some of the counseling we've done previously in our marriage of how to learn how to recognize what those things are in ourselves, where they're coming from, and then being able to share them with each other. I don't think we always do it perfectly.
Yeah.
And we're still always learning and growing in that. But I think we really do try to, especially in those moments of stress, try to explain ourselves to the other person and hopefully help them know more of what's going on in our own heads.
Yeah. So Ben, I'm interested to dig into this for a minute because I think some of this stuff will come back full circle later as we're kind of talking about this later season in your relationship and moving forward as empty nesters. But where do you think you got the idea? Because we know it's not coming from Mary, that there is some sort of a ledger. Like, how do you know, where do you think you started conceptualizing this, like, idea that you kind of take what you earn in a relationship and no more, and to kind of put your needs on the back burner for hers? I'm curious if there's any connections that we can make to how you grew up or the things that you saw growing up or learned or took away in your developmental years. I don't know. Anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, there's two things that have. And the interesting part too, like I do take what I need from Mary. It's an interesting dynamic where I'm deferring to her, but I'm also like having to figure out how to, I get my rest in the midst of the pace of life, you know. It kind of plays out, which is like I buy the things that I'm interested in, which makes Christmas really a terrible event for Mary because she's always trying to figure out, well, what do you want? I'm like, well, I bought what I wanted, you know. So,
I'm interrupting you for a minute. Doesn't that sound like you taking care of you?
Very much so.
Versus you going to Mary for your needs. Those are two really different things, right?
It is. And it comes back to the same set of events in my childhood. You know, I remember there's two things that came out and, you know, I remember being, so I'm 9 to 12 kids.
Wow.
And so,
wow.
Pretty chaotic environment. I would say that either you have a really close family or a very disjointed family, and mine's very much on the latter of that. And so I remember two conversations with my parents. One was like, hey, Ben, we have nothing left to give. I'm like, number 9 to 12, a lot of siblings with lots of demands on it. And my dad was just like, I have nothing left. And so I was like, you know, can't get you into college because, you know, we kind of make too much, but yet we don't have enough because of how big the family is. And so there was the very clear communication of make your way.
Wow.
The second thing is, as I remember, my parents kept a ledger with me. When I needed something, it got, you know, like, all right, well, here's how much money that you needed. And so at some point you have to earn it back. You have to pay it back. So, those are two very distinct moments in that teenage year cycle of it.
Wow.
Don't remember it in my first part of the childhood, but definitely remember on the second. And so for me, you know, I'm a very capable person.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, always worked from very early age. You know, I'm in technology now, but I worked on a farm when I was 12, you know, like, You just take the jobs that are available and you just work them until you get them done. And so I'm very aware that those two things have really driven this deep self-reliance on myself. And so I'm very hesitant in this to really lean on people for things. I think Mary is the closest person that I've ever leaned into. And there's a part where I realized, like, I can't, without others, like, I can't really fully, like, you can't fully care for yourself. Like, we're not wired that way. And in fact, we got married at such a young age because I was dealing with just a really deep sense of loneliness.
Yeah.
Of what comes in that sense of it. And Mary and I talked about it, so it's not a surprise for her that we both had motivations for getting married young.
Right.
And I wouldn't say that it was always, those were the most healthy reasons, but right. We've certainly made health out of it. So
yeah,
those were the two moments and kind of the corresponding way that I kind of like today.
It's amazing because, you know, a lot of times I ask that question and it's interesting all the different answers that people can start to kind of conceptualize for themselves and think back. Sometimes it's kind of fuzzy and we've got to really make connections, but talk about a clear moment, a clear example for you of like where your view of love and relationships began to develop. It's like, okay, people have limits. Mm-hmm. And once you max out their limit, that's it. There's nothing left to give.
Yeah.
Which the irony of that is it's so far from the reality of God's unconditional love for us and our spouse's unconditional love for us, you know? So what happens in your mind, Ben, when you've maxed out Mary's account? Like, what do you think would happen if you needed more and she didn't have more? Like, in your mind, okay, she's at her limit, she's at zero, I can't ask for anything. What's the worst case scenario? What are you afraid of in leaning in and asking for more?
Disappointment. What I meant by that is like, I'm a romantic, like in heart, which makes this sort of limits on people really difficult for me. So my biggest fear is that she won't be able to, and then I'll be disappointed.
Mm.
Like, you know, like that, because that sense of either like, you know, it's not loved enough or like, you know, so that would be what I fear the most is that sense of deep disappointment in that, you know, because my hopes and desires at that point to be cared for won't be met and then having to sort of sit with that.
Yeah. So ultimately, you're protecting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're scared that it's going to hurt you and remind you that, I'm sorry, we just don't have enough for you. Like, there's not enough here. So you're going to have to figure it out. So you preemptively deal with that disappointment by not allowing it to even be on the table. Like, I'm just going to deal with it right now so that I don't have to ask and be disappointed in the end. I'm just going to take care of myself.
That's right.
And then Mary, that's kind of how he's functioning behind the scenes. And you're feeling like, man, he's not coming to me for anything. He doesn't have needs. He's not communicating. I don't know what he's feeling, experiencing, thinking. Why do you think that is a trigger for you?
Why is it a trigger for me? Is that I can't break into his thoughts to help him in any way. And he is expressive in some things. It's just there's certain things I think he still kind of withholds.
Yeah.
And so I just can get lost in my own head and spiral a little bit. And I don't like that not knowing. Like, so that uncertainty, that can kind of drive me crazy. You know, not knowing what's happening next. Because one of the things that drew me to Ben at the beginning was he was safe. He was a very safe person for me. And so I kind of need...
Tell me how he was safe.
I think he was just so radically different from the way I experienced people in my family. So I grew up in a very chaotic home. And Ben and I are very independent people. We share that, I think, that we can be very independent and very self-reliant. So we actually don't lean on each other a lot. So I can be as equally like, you know, kind of trying to figure stuff out. And so Ben just was, he was the calm in the chaos. And he just was somebody that I felt like I could trust. And I really appreciated his work ethic from day one. I mean, that was a big draw, but because I thought that work ethic meant that he could take care of me when I felt like in my family, it's not that my parents didn't like take care of me, but they weren't really emotionally taking care of me. Mm. So we had tons of kids in our home. So
both of you come from big families.
Yeah. But my parents took in foster children.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of kids with a lot of problems. So you just learn to, your problems are not that big. So suck it up, go deal with it, because there's someone over here. And I want to make sure I'm saying there's nothing wrong with foster care. Love it. I think it's a really great thing that people do. But as a child in a home with foster kids, with parents who might not be as healthy of doing it, you just learn that somebody else's problems are bigger than yours. So just don't make a fuss. Like, just take care of your stuff, and because somebody else's problems are bigger.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of what I come into the relationship with is, and I think Ben does too. And so we kind of like are both not fully sharing because we figure we have to figure it out.
Yeah. And for you, that feeling of emotional distance is something that you've probably grown accustomed to. Like, this is just how it is, you know? And when you feel the emotional distance in your marriage, it probably hurts more for you than it would for the average person.
Because I think it just takes me a little longer to get there. Like, I'm usually okay with his travel, but I hit a limit.
Yeah.
And I think that going into this season, that's where it's becoming more difficult because things are slowing down for me at home, which means I'm alone a lot.
Right.
Which is different than when the kids kind of took up the time and energy and thoughts, you know?
Yeah. If you think of it this way, take the analogy of your family of origin for a minute. There's so much going on. There's so much chaos. So it makes sense that there's distance. Like, everyone's doing their own thing and dealing with the chaos in their own way. But imagine all of a sudden in your family of origin, that chaos stopped the foster kids graduated, left the house, and you were still feeling that emotional distance from your family. Now it's like, wait, but there's no reason for it. And it's almost like that cycle is repeating in your marriage. For the first 26 years, there was so much chaos that you barely notice that everyone's fending for themselves and everyone's kind of distracted. But then the chaos slows down and you realize, but wait, we're still disconnected. So I think the disconnect feels worse because it's like, well, there's nothing distracting us anymore and it's still here. We're still fending for ourselves when we don't have to be. The kids are gone. And so, but that cycle is still happening, you know? So this is, I think, why you're probably feeling it more than before. The kids were a great excuse for your default ways of responding and reacting to each other, because there's a lot of chaos. We're all used to chaos in this family, you know? But what happens when the chaos slows down is you actually have to kind of face it and figure out what's our new norm and how do we lean into this? How do we change? How do we connect? And this is where you're at today. You have one child left in the nest, right?
Yeah.
And so the house feels a little different. So are the rest of them literally out of the nest?
Well, they're in college. So our oldest is married and has moved away with her husband. They got a job out west. And so they moved last year. And this is, I think this goes into like what we're talking about, empty nest, and for me is a level of grief. So she moved away. And then my older son's in college. And he lives near us, but he lives in an apartment. So he's not home.
Yeah.
And then our two girls, they're twins. They're both at college.
Wow. So,
and then the last one will be going to college as well. So, so I'm sure they're going to be that in and out a little bit for a couple years, but, the majority of the time, they're going to be away at school. So,
wow. The house must feel very different.
It is. I struggled actually more last year, because my older son and because they're in pandemic, everybody's home.
Right.
So it was like, it's totally different. And then all of a sudden they're all like three of them left at one time. And so it just was like, I don't know, like the air left the house. Like it was just zoop, like, and, so I struggled with that more last year. It actually had a very deep depression last year for about 8 or 9 months. Mm. Some of it was hormonal stuff. But the other is just this loss.
Yeah.
You know? So I think this part of that season, I'm trying to learn how to navigate that and then what that looks like for Ben and I.
Yeah. Because I think when the kids are gone, you have the time and space to recognize your emotional needs even deeper than when they were around. And I think the time and space between you and Ben, it's much more clear when there's not kids, you know, taking up that space. Ben, have you felt that difference much? I know your world is a little different. You're kind of out of that the majority of the time. So how have you experienced that space with the kids leaving?
Yeah. Well, I get a couple things on that one. Like, so I think over the, like, I'm pretty sensitive to kind of where Mary's at normally. And so, you know, she mentioned that need for safety. That's something that I sense for her is like, you know, I tend to be ballast in her boat, if we want to think of it like that. And so there's different seasons of life for her that has kind of like, I can sense the need for more. And so, but this latest season of change, like last year was really difficult because I just didn't know how to navigate that with her. Like her, like what she needed was more than I'd anticipated or that I was able to give, because I had started another enterprise last year on top of another one I already was running. So it kind of made last year difficult. In terms of, for me, with the kids, like, I miss them. Like, there's nothing greater than when I see my girls come home, you know, and I'm fairly close to them. And so, you know, there's nothing that, like, it excites me to think about the next time I see them. And then when they're not, like, in one way, because I'm, like, I feel like I travel, and I travel 2 to 3 days a week. So it's like, thankfully, I'm not like I used to be where I was gone weeks, the whole week. I know recently I've been gone for a week at a
Mary's
time.
Mary's like, I don't know about
I'm like,
that.
Well, a little longer than that.
Yeah, the season is certainly, this last year, we stepped into a busy season for sure. But, you know, so I feel it, you know, and just kind of my sadness for just like the loss of them, you know, just like there's nothing greater than just like getting a chance to hug on them and kiss on them and chat with them, you know, in those moments at home.
So. Yeah. But your fulfillment isn't coming from those interactions in the same way Mary's was, right?
Yeah. I only need a little bit to go a long way. You know, Mary and I were chatting about this weekend when we were together. It's like I need a little bit, like I'm a words of affirmation guy. That's my love language. I'm like, a little affirmation goes an incredible long way. Like my tank can kind of run off of a lot of just a little bit. So getting that from the kids and Mary when I'm home, like that, like knowing that they're good and knowing that I'm loved by them is typically a pretty, you know, it's a lot of fuel.
Yeah. They still have room on their ledger for you.
People are always asking me, where do I find a good counselor? At the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, we want to help you navigate through any difficult season you might be facing. We want to help you find relief from the pain and stress of the present and healing from the wounds of the past in order to find freedom, joy, and peace in the life you're living today. Our team of trained, licensed professional counselors will walk by your side and give you the tools you need to face any personal or relational issue you might be up against today. With an integrative approach, we'll guide you with truths from God's Word paired with the best of modern counseling and psychology to help you get unstuck and live freely. There's no better time for healing than today. Book a session with one of our counselors at deborahfalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing from the inside out.
Here's a question I have for you, Ben. I'm still not hearing too many needs that you have outside of like, we love you, good job, which is super low need. Like, that's not much. I mean, you could go to your neighbor for that if you wanted, like a pat on the back, good job, get it done, go back out there. Like, what do you need from Mary? Mary's well, like, I want to know the answer to this. Yeah. Mary's sitting in anticipation right now. You guys should see her face.
That's a deep question that, you know, I struggle
with. Well,
let
me pause you for a second. I almost have to chuckle when you say that's a deep question because I'm thinking it's such a basic question. but it isn't that telling that for you it's a deep question? It's like, that's a good question. I don't think about that very often.
I don't. I will say I wrote down like the note, like I desperately want to be loved by Mary. There's a handful of people that I just like. So I know like there's this ache and this deep need to be loved that I sit with. So that part, you know, like I'll acknowledge. The question is how, like when you say, what are your needs to be met? It's like, I struggle with that because I just, you know, it's the Christmas time where Mary's like, well, what gifts do you want? I'm like, I have no idea what I want. But inside it's like, and it's like, well, you know, I want to be amazed. You know, I love The Incredibles. Like, you know, anyone that raises kids, you know, Pixar is amazing. And the little kid's waiting for him. It's like, well, what do you want? I don't know, something amazing, right? So I tend to have this, like, this expectation, this hopefulness of amazing, you know, but I never can put words on it. And so I find that that's a beast in my life that I just don't feed, you know, because it's like, I don't want the disappointment. I don't know how to codify it, you know? So, it's easier for me just to sort of let that be fallow, though there's times that it comes up and it's just like, I have this deep sense of, like I mentioned, like we got connected because of loneliness. It's like, cause I desire to be loved, desperately desire to be loved and known. And so, but when it comes to like, what are the needs that I need from Mary? It's like, I don't translate those well. I just really struggle with that.
Yeah. And in a strange way, you've got this like pendulum of all or very little, like mm-hmm. either amazing or I'm good.
Yeah. I love food. I'm like, I'll eat the nicest places and I'll eat at a taco truck. Like,
yeah.
So I am very much like a pendulum guy, which Mary's smiling about, because like I'm either on or off, you know, it's just, it tends to be my life.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, how do we get you to live in the middle a little bit more? And I think the middle is risky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're taking a risk by going to that random restaurant on Yelp with those reviews and you don't know what you're going to get, but it could be great. The middle is the riskiest place to be, but it's like, I can ask for more and receive. I'm not looking for amazing perfection, like knock my socks off. But at the same time, I'm leaning into the fact that I do have some needs right now, and you could probably be a great person to fill those needs. Like, I think in your family of origin, there probably wasn't much of a middle ground, the average everyday give and take. And so
yeah,
it's probably
on our own, even in a large family. And, you know, like goes without like saying, I love my parents. You know, I think about the uniqueness of the gifts that they gave me when I was younger. You know, it was in that late teen years that they were just burnt out. That kind of like set some of these things in place. So, yeah.
I would be burnt out too with that many kids. I mean, I think it's important, like as we're talking, to acknowledge that when we talk about our family of origin, I know that it's through the lens of the utmost love and respect and the realization that they did what they could with what they knew and what they had. But we still carry baggage from it that then we have to do what we can and what we know in order to not pass that along to our families and children. We don't look back to put shame on those who have gone before us. We look back so that we can heal for those who are coming after us. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate both of you saying that about your parents, but know that when you're talking to me, that is 100% the lens that I already see through, you know? I do think, though, as you guys are entering this stage, being acutely aware of the little kid inside of each of you and what that child needs is going to be a really helpful way to navigate each other. Not that we treat each other like children, but that we see that child inside and know how to respond in a way that helps them heal rather than hinders them from healing. You know, I love the passage where Jesus says, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder one of them." I often think of that as I'm viewing my own spouse, because I think when God looks at us, he doesn't just see me, myself at this current cross section of my age. He sees my 2-year-old self, my 8-year-old self, my 12-year-old self, my awkward teenage years, all the way to today. And I wonder if we could get a glimpse of our spouse in that way and a glimpse of ourselves in that way, to kind of help us navigate how can we best interact with each other, how can we best interact for ourselves. So Ben, when you think of yourself like at that age where your parents are like, sorry, we love you, but we got nothing left, you know, how old were you then?
I think it was I was 15, 16, just before I met Mary.
So when you think about that 15, 16-year-old boy, man, talk about a setup for meeting Mary. You know, like talk about a setup. This could have went bad. Don't you ever look back and say, thank you, Lord, that even in our emptiness and our needs, like you could have met somebody that was not Mary and it could have went south, you know?
Yeah. I'm grateful every day because it is a great counterbalance for it, you know, for who I am. And so I'm deeply appreciative of her and what she brings.
So when you think of that 15-year-old version of yourself, what do you think you needed?
I needed advice. You know, I needed someone that would, you know, be present in kind of like the 15, 16, you're just like super awkward, trying to figure out life, like, you know, socially, you know, clueless, you know, all that great fun teenage stuff that occurs in that case. So, you know, I think that, and from that, you know, unfortunately, there was a lot of mistakes made in my life because I just never understood how to have a mentor or how to have someone that was going to be present and walking through. So like, you know, I carry the bumps and bruises, you know, and regrets and awkwardness moments from that point forward. So that would have been really, you know, what I felt like I needed in that case. And it's given me a really acuteness to understand the value of that. So that's one of those things I give my kids. It's why I do a lot of mentoring for the young, you know, leaders in our church. Is like, I know what it is to be alone and without someone with the wisdom to kind of say, hey, here's like, you want to avoid stepping there. And so that was, you know, that was what I probably needed in that period, you know, as opposed to just kind of like, all right, go figure out life.
How do the two of you do with regards to emotional connection?
Connecting with each other emotionally?
Yeah.
Well, we talk a lot, which is good when we get the time. We do try to have those, you know, evenings out together, you know, and like Friday nights are usually good for us. If he's home, and we'll go out to dinner and we'll just kind of unload our week, so to speak. I think through just conversation.
So let's talk about conversation for a minute. So you might have heard me say that there's different levels of conversation. The first level is the facts, kind of the basic everyday, where are you going? How are the kids? What was work like? What are you up to? What's the business doing? You know, all that. The second level is a little bit deeper. It's your opinions and ideas. It's deeper because it's more attached to you. It's not just what's going on with the kids. It's more like, here's my opinion about how we should parent them and what we should do. And here's my opinion and ideas about our family, life, the world, our relationship. The third level is a little deeper than that. We're swimming a little bit deeper now into the waters and we're going into our feelings, like overwhelmed, tired, exhausted, excited, insecure, embarrassed, hurt. You know, all of those different feelings of, man, I just felt so insecure when that happened and I'm feeling overwhelmed by this. And we're just sharing a little bit more of what's happening underneath the surface. And that requires more of yourself. You don't just go to your neighbor's house and talk about your feelings, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas you can run into a neighbor and easily talk about level one, maybe even a little level two. And then I think the deepest level is our faith and what God is teaching us and how he's working in our lives and, you know, the spirit and all of those things in are the deepest part of our being. So when you think of your relationship and your conversation in levels, what level do you tend to camp out in of those four?
We are pretty deep. So we will go all the way to level four and we can camp out in that 3-4 space.
Would you agree, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah. Like one of the rhythms we've tried to do is to start devotions and together in the morning. Yeah. So I agree. Like 3-4 is some of those areas actually really easy for us to go to.
When we get time, I think that's our struggle is finding those moments to do that. Like we just right now, the pace of life is difficult and yeah, it's hard to stay on the same schedule right now to be able to do that. We might have little pockets of that here and there, but we do like to go a little deeper. I probably share more in general on that overall, but we both do that together.
Yeah, that makes sense. So really it's a matter of making the time to connect and staying connected and then being intentional, Ben, specifically about how much you're giving and your role in connecting. You know, when you think about connecting, it's two hands that have to reach out for each other and kind of link.
Yeah.
If you have one hand and the other hand's like, I'm afraid to, I don't want to do too much, I don't want to ask too much, you're missing that connection.
Yeah.
And that ability to get your needs met and the ability for Mary to feel like she's really connecting with you. It's not just about her needs, because that becomes a one-sided, lopsided relationship and it doesn't feel as fun, you know? And I think the ledger is something that you're both going to actively have to work to destroy. In some relationships, people kind of need a ledger. I agree. In some relationships where it's one-sided and one person is doing all the work, there's got to be some pullback and reassessing. But this is not that in any way, shape, or form. Like you're both giving a lot in different ways. And I think you should both receive a lot. And there's nobody else you can receive from but Mary. Like that's the thing. Like when you suppress some of those needs, I think they have to go somewhere. And there's nobody that can meet your sexual, physical, emotional, spiritual needs in the way that Mary can. And so I think the work of this season for you guys is to bridge that gap of space and having to be intentional about not just, oh, Mary, what do you need and what's going on? But Ben, what do you need? Now, Mary, I have a question for you. How do you feel like you do with drawing out and inviting Ben to kind of bring what he needs to the table?
Probably very poorly. Yeah, because I can definitely get just overwhelmed pretty quickly. And this is where I think he hesitates. So I'll take ownership of this side of it. I think he hesitates because he already sees my sense of being overwhelmed and then doesn't want to add to it.
Right.
Right. So he's always in the business of how do I help alleviate? And so I haven't learned how to be more receptive to his needs.
Mm.
The other side of that is when can be difficult about when he expresses a need, or like he said before, like he doesn't have a way to codify it. Like he doesn't have anything specific. So I'm either guessing or he's the extremist. So it's something wildly amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I can't necessarily fulfill it.
Which seems even more overwhelming.
Yeah. So then I'm like, well, I can't do that. So what else can I do? And I think what you said earlier about that in between, that middle, Ben is not ever in the middle on anything. And so I can be in the middle. I can be content with something smaller, you know, as a need being met. And I think that he has a hard time, like even just recognizing that is a need that's being met in the middle. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It makes total sense. You know, one thing that we do, this is a parenting move, but remember I talked about that little kid inside of us. And the weird thing is sometimes parenting strategies really work well in marriage. One parenting strategy, when you have a child who isn't cooperating the way that you need them to cooperate, is you begin asking them for things that you don't truly need. Like, they're not like going to make or break it if it doesn't happen. So Ben, this is kind of for you. Like, for example, we're at the dinner table and I need salt. And I say to the little guy, hey, could you please pass the salt? And if he's distracted and doesn't hear me and doesn't pass the salt, it's not the end of the world. But if he does pass the salt, then I have an opportunity to say, that was awesome. Thank you so much. That was so helpful. You're a really helpful kid. I really appreciate you. You know, you were just in the right place at the right time. And you heap on encouragement on a need that wasn't actually a huge need, but it's almost like the process of getting them to recognize that they have the ability to meet needs, and then they get praise for it and it makes them feel really good. In a weird way, Ben, you're going to start kind of doing this with Mary. We're not going to start with, you know, there's a fire, I need you to call 911, like emergency, crazy, amazing, you know, life or death needs. But the small things that if she responds, it's a win. If she doesn't respond, it's okay. And you slowly build your ability to trust her, to not let you down, and to not disappoint you. And if she does disappoint you, because it's going to happen, her name is Mary, not Jesus, then you get the opportunity to talk about it. And yeah, you need practice in talking about your disappointments. You were never able to talk about your disappointments and your hurts and your feelings of letdown. Like, man, that really hurt me. You know, I felt like you didn't care. I needed you to be there for me. And I think there's that part of you that needs healing, that needs the ability to talk it out, to work through it, to tell somebody, hey, this is what I needed, and this is what I'm feeling, and this is the disappointment I'm facing, and I need you to be in it with me when I'm feeling that disappointment. And allow Mary to be in it with you, even when she's let you down. This is the practice of connecting with each other and being there for each other through the good and the not so good. And I also feel like, in a way, the Lord helps us heal from the wounds of our past when we're in it together. We can talk through it, talk through that disappointment. And as you kind of build your ability to recognize your needs, it goes from, could you please pass the salt, to something a little bit more significant, and then a little bit more significant, and a little bit more significant. And I think the process too is also helping you, Ben, be in tune to what you need and how to put it into words. I'm curious, Ben, and I don't mean to make this a therapy session about Ben, but ironically, when we help Ben, we help Mary. Ben, how do you interact with God? You know, do you feel like he's got a ledger?
No. The part I'm working with God right now is, yeah, is really understanding him out in a new light. So I see God as faithful and suffering. I see God as a good master. And I'm really in a season right now where I'm like learning to see God as a father that delights in me.
Ben, isn't that the opposite of I don't have enough for you? It's like, gosh, I need more of you, man.
Yeah. And I intellectually know it. I mean, like, there's nothing but that's the hard part. I mean, that's the challenge of our faith, is to understand his character at an head level and really sort of be able to have it brought deep into that one. And so that's the season I'm in with God. Mm. So I know he wants to, and I know it's not because of him, it's because of me. And it's like, God, it's hard for me to see anyone, you know, that would delight in me and feel it. And so, you know, which it goes back to the desperately wanting to be loved. So delight is a word that's really big. And so, so that's the thing I'm working with God on and trying to figure out the how am I not able to see it in him? Because I see his goodness all around me, but I just don't necessarily always feel, I haven't yet felt what it is to be a child that's spoiled with love, you know? Like, I know what it is to hold my kids, delight in them, and to love on them in a way that is without expectations. So maybe the ledger part, as I understand that, delight without expectations. So subtly, I do have a ledger with God, you know, in that case. But but yeah, just learning that word delight and what that means. And,
I love that. Mary, do you feel like you're learning a little bit more about Ben as he's talking?
Yeah, because I didn't know that he was working through that right now. So,
Sorry about that.
I think he forgets that he doesn't tell me things. So no, that's great. And I see that that's been a desire for him in him for a long time. And I think part of our marriage is, I know you said it jokingly that I'm Mary and not Jesus. And I've sometimes felt like there's things that I can't give him, but only God can. And he can fulfill all of Ben's needs.
I agree with that. But I'll tell you this, Mary. I think that one thing that you can do is show him that you delight in him by asking more questions, showing curiosity and interest. And seeing that side of him, that kid that wants to be delighted in, like, you're fun, you know, like, I want to know more about you. And I think ideally Ben gets to a point where he volunteers all of that information. Like, let me just tell you everything I'm thinking and feeling and experiencing. But part of the process of healing for both of you is the awareness that somebody actually wants to know. And somebody's actually really interested in me and my inner workings. And I feel like you can bring a lot of healing in that alone by just being like, hey, I am so into you. Like, what are you thinking? And now I just want to know what's going on in that brain of yours, that beautiful brain of yours, you know? Mm-hmm. And just showing him that interest, I think, could be an easy way to bridge that gap and instantly feel, once he responds, that you're connected again.
Right.
You know, right now the dynamic is you go to him, you're overwhelmed, he kind of puts out the fire, and then we move on. But that's causing the feeling for both of you of disconnect. And I still think Ben's going to help put out the fires. Like, I think ultimately the Lord does that for you too, Mary, but you help each other. It's the same thing. God's going to have to work on Ben to show him, I delight in you, standing alone. But Mary can still help that process. God's going to have to help Mary with those fires and feelings of overwhelm. But Ben can still help Mary in the middle of that. So you each have something to bring to the table to help each other heal, even though God is the ultimate healer, you know? And I think when you can look at it like that, it kind of changes your perspective. Like, you're helping each other on the journey of healing.
Right.
So as we close today, I want you each to do something for me. I want you each to look at the other person with kind of what we talked about. So with Mary, it's going to be that theme of, Ben, I delight in you. I want to know you. I love all of these things about you. And I want you to think of a phrase to just affirm that to Ben. And Ben, I want you to look at Mary and tell her that you want to connect with her. You want to feel that closeness. You don't want to have space. You want to believe and know that she's a safe place, you know, that you can come to and hide your heart because you know that she's not going anywhere. And I just want each of you to kind of share that to the other person and take a step in filling that need. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. So, Ben, I see you. I see all of the wonderful parts of you, all of the things that you provide for us, but also your heart and your caring for others. I see your hard work, and I see that I'm just madly, deeply in love with you. And I don't want to do life with anyone else at any point in time. And I just want to, I want to be close to you and know you more.
Thanks, love. Mary, I do want to connect with you deeply, like to be known by you, to be able to sort of entrust you with all the different feelings that I have and the needs that I have. And I love walking this journey out with you. And I know that we're transitioning in a really big season and that it's going to be felt by us differently. And I want to be there with you as, be there for you, you know, as you process that next, like the kids leaving in a way that's uniquely yours and step into that next season in a way that's really fun and exciting and fresh and anew.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love you guys. You are such a great couple, and I'm excited to see what the Lord is going to do to bring a next layer of healing to each of you. I think in the quieter seasons of empty nest, we have more opportunity to do some of that deeper work. And that the Lord's like, okay, it's time for the next layer, you know, the next layer of healing, of becoming more like Christ, of growing in your relationship, of becoming even more vulnerable and intimate with one another than ever before. Healing a little bit deeper from some of those hurts from the past, those needs from the past, you know, allowing God to fill them in a new way and bringing them to each other for fulfillment in a new way, that you have more capacity than you had when you had 5 kids, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for you in this season. And if there's any way that I can help with some of that deeper work, or one of my counselors can help, you know, Ben, as you're kind of on this journey of really believing that God delights in you and how that healing will overflow into your marriage and your family and marry some of those deeper needs of like understanding your emotions and your need for emotional connection and realizing that your needs are just as important and not just the kids, you know? Right. And if either of you feel like you want to do some of that deeper work, reach out to me. We'd love to kind of help you along on this journey. And I just thank you for being brave enough to share your stories and your marriage with us today. I know it's encouraged me, but I know it'll encourage a lot of people to kind of think through how some of these interactions reflect our need for deeper healing. You know, and how we can invite God and each other into that process. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
It's good to have you, Ben.
I appreciate all the words and insights and wisdom. It's really great.
Yeah. Well, God bless the two of you, and we'll connect again soon.
Awesome.
Take care. After we got off the call today, I talked to Ben and Mary about the importance of having a weekly check-in. You guys have heard me talking about this a lot. It's something that John and I practice every week. We call it our Sunday night check-ins. But really, it's a time to connect and go underneath the surface to talk about what you're feeling and experiencing, what your needs are, how your marriage is doing, what's going on in your family. It's almost like that weekly business meeting where you prioritize your marriage and your individual needs. In this case, Ben would have the opportunity to share about what's going on inside of him and what he needs and what he's experiencing. Mary would have the opportunity to share what's going on inside of her and how Ben can support her. They could dig a little deeper and talk about their marriage and relationship and their plan for the week with the kids. It's just such a great time to connect, to confess any sins that might be on the table, to encourage and affirm each other, to pray for each other, and to intentionally stay connected. We talked today about the idea that it's hard to find the time to go deep. You know, the average married couple spends 15 minutes a week in quality conversation. That's not very much time. And if we're not intentional about making time to connect, we'll find that the pressures of life just begin to pull us apart. It doesn't matter how much you want it. What matters is that you make time for it. So if you're listening today and you don't have a weekly check-in built into your schedule, I'd really encourage you and your spouse to sit down and find a time that works for both of you. Set an alarm in your phone to go off each week to remind you that it's time to connect. Commit to being intentional about blocking off your schedule, turning off Netflix, putting your phones down, and making the time to face each other eye to eye, heart to heart, and connect on a weekly basis. I promise you, it will literally transform your relationship. For more on weekly check-ins, I invite you to check out my book, Choosing Marriage. You know, if you're struggling right now in your relationship, or maybe you just want to strengthen your marriage, I invite you to check out our counselors at the Deborah Falada Counselors Network. Our Christian counselors are here for you to help walk along this journey with you and find ways to build up and strengthen your relationship, deal with some of those past wounds and sore spots that might be creeping up to the surface, and help take your marriage to the next level. Book a session with one of our counselors today at deborahfaleda.com/counseling. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast and giving me your time today. If you love what we're doing here, leave us a 5-star rating and review and help us get the podcast out to others. If you want to go deeper with getting healthy and making healthy relationships, go check out some of my books, True Love Dates, Choosing Marriage, Love in Every Season, Are You Really Okay, Married Sex, or my newest book, Reset. You can find more information about those as well as hundreds of articles and courses over at my blog, truelovedates.com or deborahfaleda.com. I love connecting with you online, so find me on Facebook or Instagram at Deborah Falada and tell me your story. If you have a question for me, reach out to me at truelovedates.com/love-and-relationships and we'll try to get it answered on the show. I'm Deborah Falada, and it was so great being together today, and I can't wait to be with you again next week. See you later. The Love and Relationships podcast is proud to be a part of the Ivy Media podcast team.